I have a very special guest to introduce now. He is a one of the, I would say, next generation positive psychiatrist and positive psychologist, but he's also an international speaker and an author of a brand new book called Synchronicity. Chris Mackey, how are you doing, mate? Can you hear us, Chris?
Yes, good, thanks, Mitch. Can hear you well.
Thanks so much for having time to come on the show. This is one of the most exciting things I've heard about in many years. I guess what you'd say, science is now coming on board with what once would have been considered mysticism in some way. And it looks like, from what you're talking about, that the certain really positive events in one's life can actually change one's neurology. And this leads to the idea of positive psychology, which allows people to actually adapt themselves with positive reinforcement. And your book, Synchronicity, is all about the way synchronous experiences have this heightened ability to cause adaption in a positive sense for people. Would that be right?
Yeah, well, that's a deep way of summarising a lot of what I think is true, Mitch. And we've had some discussions before, and I know that you have a deep understanding of many of these topics. But so synchronicity basically relates to meaningful coincidences or the uncanny timing of events that seems to go well beyond chance.
Yeah.
And many people might think it's a kind of superstitious idea if something happens and we think there's a particular relevance to it, like it seems meant to be. And some people think that's superstitious thinking. A lot of things just happen by chance. But one thing that interests me is Carl Jung, who came up with the idea of synchronicity, only first wrote about it when he was encouraged to by Wolfgang Pauli, one of the fathers of quantum physics,
yeah.
Who said to Jung that, hey, look, I know you're interested in this topic. You haven't written about it. In order to encourage you to write about it, I'll write a book with you. And so Wolfgang Pauli wrote a chapter on archetypes in the same book that Jung first published, Synchronicity. So it just shows that the link between science and mysticism, if you like, is a bit closer than people have realised.
It's incredible, mate. And a lot of this work that you've been working on this for a number of years now, but I understand a lot of the work is based on a Nobel Prize-winning scientist named Eric Kendall, who in 2000 won the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine. And this has gone on to gentleman Ernest Rossi's work that has been looking at the way the DNA structure in the self can be actually altered through experience.
Yes, Ernest Rossi's work is particularly fascinating because he looks at brain science and neuroplasticity. He looks at the kind of conditions that lead us to develop new brain cells and brain connections.
Yep.
And a lot of what makes a difference to developing new brain cells and synapses is novelty, and especially numinous experience. A numinous experience means something that fills us with a sense of wonder or awe, something that we're fascinated by. And when people have particularly meaningful coincidences, like maybe they think of someone that they haven't seen for years and then they run into that person straight afterwards, or that person rings them up when they go to ring them, and that happens with maybe uncanny frequency, that leads people to have a sense of wonder or awe. And if we have any particularly meaningful coincidence that stands out, well, that by definition is numinous.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tends to switch on genes that create new proteins and brain connections. And also what Ernest Rossi described is that when we have numinous experiences, and synchronicity certainly fits in with that, it switches on dopamine genes, which are important for motivation and learning and pleasure. So, but actually, one of the things about Rossi's story, which is a fascinating example of synchronicity, is that he completed a manuscript of a book on brain science and neuroplasticity, and then the next day he had a stroke. And he was an elderly fellow at that stage, and you'd think that that would end the career of a world leader. But during his rehabilitation for the stroke, when he was using a keyboard, he realised that it was a little bit like hand levitation, using a keyboard with your hands going up and down, and he was a world expert in hypnosis. And he started to develop these creative ways. He developed a new psychotherapy technique involving moving your hands in certain ways that ultimately he has shown can switch on 200 different genes that relate to a 90-minute session of this method he developed can switch on genes related to things like immunity systems, learning, schizophrenia, autism, mood, a whole range of things. So following his stroke, he used his theories, he used his experience of having to recover to prove his theories, if you like, of neuroplasticity. He showed that if you keep on learning things, if you keep on looking at things in new ways, it can help you keep on developing. And he's done some of his greatest work post-stroke using his own experience to show how you can keep on developing new skills.
So the spice of life does keep us young and also keeps us updated neurologically.
Yes, and a lot of it is keeping on doing things that are novel.
And
we
of course,
know that what helps us, yes.
Yeah, of course, every single day we're reinforcing or breaking down habits within our neurology. This, Kendall's been looking at, the 90-minute to 2-hour shift that can occur through positive reinforcement, that can also work negatively, I'd expect, too. So the concepts of mindfulness and trying to have a positive sense of psychology, just in general, is actually a means of reinforcing positive neurological development.
And I think what you're touching on there sort of points to some of the directions that that psychology is going in more these days. Like over the last 10 or 15 years, there's an emphasis more on positive psychology and optimistic ways of looking at things. There's more emphasis on mindfulness, so taking from also Eastern spiritual practices, more emphasis on meditation, yoga, also more emphasis on philosophy of acceptance, not always just having to try and change emotions, but observing them.
Yeah.
And then if we have painful emotions and simply step back and recognizing them and observe them, we don't always have to do much to try and change them. We realise our feelings do change. Then also there's more emphasis on biology and the neuroscience.
Yeah.
Because it's such an optimistic thing to know that we can keep on creating new brain connections through life. We can keep on reprogramming ourselves. And then I think the final thing that's only coming up in the last couple of years is the importance of spirituality. That's been a really neglected part of psychology over the last century, really. And I think that there's a much greater interest in that, not necessarily in terms of being religious, but looking in terms of life purpose and meaning.
What once would have been considered mystical is now being realised as quite natural science, actually, with a new fidelity of equipment and so forth. We can actually pick up on things that we'd never been able to measure in the past, and now we're getting some real evidence-based science on it. Now, also, I wanted to ask about, you're talking about positive psychology, so this is sort of within the mind of the self, the psyche,
yes,
representing the soul and the study of the soul. How does psychiatry differ from psychology?
Well, psychiatry, in its essence, is based on a medical approach. And over the last several decades, with a lot of emphasis on neurobiology, there's a lot of emphasis on brain chemistry. And I think what has happened in modern psychiatry over recent decades, there's been so much emphasis on brain chemistry in terms of medication. I think the field of psychiatry has become somewhat more reductionistic that way, because I should point out that, again, that Jung, who developed the idea of synchronicity and spoke much about the soul and all the rest of it, he was a psychiatrist, and he was a psychiatrist who practiced psychiatry in maybe an original term of the word, soul doctoring. Psychiatry technically means soul doctoring.
Yeah.
But I think there's much less of the soul in psychiatry now, and I think in the attempts to become scientifically respected like other fields of medicine that were advancing with different kind of medical investigation techniques and all the rest of it, the emphasis changed so much onto medication and the biochemistry, some of the other elements were lost. So basically psychology relates to disciplines looking at ways that we can change our thoughts, feelings and behaviour using non-medical ways. So a lot of the therapies are talking-based therapies or involve different behavioural practices to help change habits. Psychiatry does include, can include that as well, but psychiatry has tended to focus ever more biological and medication aspects over more recent years. I think that will change and become more blended in future as well.
Oh, it's really exciting. I think we might just go to a track for, just to break up the interview for a little bit. I've got a song called Synchronicity coming up, so that's going to be just perfect. But when we come back, I think it'll be great to delve into how we can actually work through as an individual to try and develop this sense of positive psychology. And we'll have a chat about your book, and we'll let listeners know there's a copy on the way for them too. Here's a great song called Synchronicity. I'll put it on now. It's only short. You're listening to The Bubble Beyond on Bay FM 99.9.
Great.
FM 99.9, organic community radio. Harvested fresh every day.
Yes, back now live on The Bubble and Beyond. And we have author, psychologist, and all-round champion, Chris Mackey, on the line. Oh, what's that funny noise I'm hearing? I'm stopping that. Oops, there we go. That was in the background. My naughty computer as I pulled the plug out. Hey, Chris, you still on the line there, mate?
Yes, Mitch. Sure.
Oh, geez. So let's... can we talk about how people can put some of this wonderful work into practice?
Well, I think one of the first things is just being open to notice uncanny coincidences and just let ourselves be a little bit curious about them, have a sense of wonder about them. And I might just mention a few of the examples that more commonly come up. One type of synchronicity is propinquity. That is when we have a sense of connection or closeness to someone, such as when we think of a person and then they call us at that time. Or, one example is a lady who described she thought of a friend that they hadn't seen for about 10 years. And she thought, I'll put in a phone call to that friend. And the friend got back to her a couple of days later saying, you know, when you called a couple of days ago, that was the exact moment that my wife died.
That happens quite often.
Put them in connection again. So put them in connection again in a really meaningful way. Now, the fact that that person acted on their intuition, it leads you to think, well, it does lead you to have a sense of wonder about whether there is some kind of pattern or order to things where we're connected to people in certain ways.
Well,
there's also number synchronicity. So people more commonly say that they might see 11:11 on a clock, on a digital clock.
All the time.
The number 11 is one that comes up. In my case, it's often repeated sixes that come up that have a certain meaning. But there's also serendipity. Many scientific discoveries are made by uncommon opportunities. And I mentioned earlier about Ernest Rossi's experience where he used the serendipity of his own stroke related to what he'd written about to demonstrate how his theories could work. And I think that in that latter example, it shows... I often think of synchronicity as an affirming tick that we're on the right track. I think of it as a tick from the universe, a tick from the universe to keep on heading in the direction that we are. And I think that if we have a run of more frequent synchronicity, so we seem more intuitively attuned to things, I think that's when we're more likely, when we have that open frame of mind, to experience it. And I think it can give us clues, nudging us in a direction more towards, if you like, our destiny or our fate.
That's right. There is this suggestion that there's an alignment occurring when you have a synchronous experience that sort of feels like it's a very strong boost, and I think most people will understand and have experienced that themselves. But what sort of seems to be suggested is that there's a genetic best practice almost that we can follow if we can tune into our synchronous experiences and allow to build and bolster that neurological network that delivers that type of experience.
Well, I suppose one thing that I notice is people who report synchronicity more often seem to me to be more open to intuition, more ready to go inward, less dismissive of thoughts or reactions that might not seem rational at first sight. And I think this is one of the main things about synchronicity and noticing that inner experience. I think that there's too much emphasis in our culture on the rational.
Yep.
And looking to be logical and realistic all the time that way. And it can lead people to dismiss going inward and looking at their intuition, or if people feel that maybe they need to take a creative change in direction or adapt to a situation in maybe a different way. I think it really helps if we tune in to that intuition. And actually, I might just mention something about that intrigues me about our emphasis on rationality. When we look to be very rational and realistic and look to dismiss superstitious thinking, sometimes we're applying logical thinking, such as based on the work of René Descartes and Isaac Newton. We talk about a Cartesian Newtonian model of being logical and all the rest of it. Now, the interesting thing is Descartes, when he came up with his ideas about rational analytical thinking, he knew he was onto something because these ideas came to him in a vision that were confirmed with a dream.
Yep,
exactly. So even Descartes himself put a great weight on visions and dreams. And then Isaac Newton, he wrote more about alchemy, a mystical activity where people are looking to mix base metals to create gold. He wrote more about alchemy than he wrote about gravity. So I find it intriguing that the people whose work is taken to dismiss mystical thinking something that doesn't seem rational, they were actually writing to it themselves.
How would people develop a greater sense of intuition? Are there any easy steps of learning to quieten the mind or so forth to actually get on top of this?
The main kind of things I think of are just being open and responding, just allowing ourselves to respond to inklings or intuitions or whims. If another term I use is to notice what you notice. If something stands out and grabs your attention in a curious way, it might be you think of someone that you haven't seen for a while, or it might be you read an article and it uncannily connects with something you've just been thinking beforehand. Just being open to noticing those little connections that seem to be reinforced by something. And then what we can say is you file it away. You let it almost be in the back of your mind. You don't have to realise straight off what that might mean for you, but sometimes a little bit later there's something else that uncannily comes up and you think, oh, maybe that's what that was on about.
So you don't...
So partly being open to inklings and not dismissing it. And then I think we're tapping more into our soul by going more inward that way. And this probably relates more to the our right hemisphere brain functioning than our left hemisphere brain functioning. Our right hemisphere more spatial and connecting the dots and all the rest of it. Our left brain more with stored learning and analytical thinking. And I think that we can do more to emphasise the open-mindedness to responding to different inklings. And then later on, we join the dots in certain ways, partly by just allowing ourselves to notice these things, file it away, see if it does come up as relevant later on. And sometimes people say, it's just amazing. I had this in the back of my mind. I've been thinking about this issue for a couple of days or maybe mulling over a problem, and then suddenly I meet exactly the person who can help me solve that.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe what you're saying is don't do synchronicity, be synchronous instead. Hey, your book, I've got a copy of it right in front of me. We're going to do a giveaway, a copy of it to our subscribers through Bay FM here. It's a fantastic book called Synchronicity, Empower Your Life with the Gift of Coincidence. How did you decide to become an author, and how's the book going?
Well, I was very fortunate in a way, because I got a phone call out of the blue from someone representing Watkins, a UK publisher, and someone from Sydney rang me up who knew my sister, who's an editor, and my sister explained that I was doing work in positive psychology. So the person from the publishing company looked up our website at chrismackey.com.au and saw we had a lot of blogs on positive psychology. And so she rang me up and said, look, have you ever thought of writing a book? Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, look, maybe in the back of my mind, and I thought maybe I should write a book about work in the psychotherapy field. But after about 10 minutes, our conversation got onto synchronicity, and she realised how passionate I was about it, and then she said, you should write about that. So here we are about 3 years later. It took 2 years to write and lots of research, because I did need to include more research on shamanism and quantum physics, as well as just putting things in an order that try and reach as wide a lay audience as possible. It's designed a book for the general public and to help people tap into ideas of fate and destiny and looking at life purpose and meaning and how we can draw on uncanny coincidences that way. And
it's just awesome.
Yeah, so look, I might just finally mention too, we do have a website called Synchronicity Unwrapped. So
right.
www.synchronicityunwrapped.com.au, and that has a range of blogs and other materials, and I'll keep on adding to that website over coming years, actually, and keep on adding different blogs so people can access things that way, yes.
Hey, thank you so much for challenging yourself and going beyond just the normal psychologist into developing this new model. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that the phone's going hot now, so there are lots of people trying to call up to win the book. I could talk about this all day, Chris, but we're really short for time, and I just want to thank you so much for all the many years of hard work and the imagination you've placed into this endeavour to open it up for all of us. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much, Mitch. Interviews like this make it all fun, so thank you.
Thanks very much. And this will be podcast a little bit later. I hope you get a copy of it, buddy. And thanks a lot. We've been speaking with Chris Mackey, psychologist, author, and lecturer. Thanks, buddy.
Bye, Mitch.
Bye.